We do have Irene Watson on the line right here.
Good morning, Irene. Thanks for coming on 3CR Community Radio. How you been?
Hello. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Absolutely. So could tell us how you've been going and what you've been doing over the last 40 years, I suspect, looking at Aboriginal law and international legal conventions and how it applies to Australia. As you know, it's the 70th anniversary of the Genocide Convention and Human Rights Charter today.
Yeah.
And just want to get your thoughts about what's Australia's position on all of this.
Well, I think there's lots to think about, isn't there? And we probably won't cover it all, but what's Australia's position? I think Australia's position on this, like everything else, is pretty much we can take it right back to Terra Nullius, you know, but where, you know, the founding principle of the Australian state, Terra Nullius, Aboriginal peoples didn't exist, and if we did exist, we existed lesser than, you know, any other members of the human race. And I don't believe that we have moved on from that position at all. We might have moved on in terms of the language and the rhetoric of recognition, but in fact, and going back to your point about genocide, the laws, the international laws of genocide don't apply to Aboriginal people's situation. So in a sense, there's a direct line back to Terra Nullius. There's no, or very, very difficult, as you know yourself, Robbie, and many of us know from the application that was made in the 90s, you know, arising out of Native Title and the amendments to the Native Title Act and the action that was taken there, constructing that those amendments and the whole history that led us to that point were acts of genocide against Aboriginal peoples, was that the finding of the court, and as it went to the High Court, who wouldn't even hear it, did they? It wasn't an application that they would give leave to hear, that the crime of genocide did not apply to Australia.
Just on that, Senator Brian Gregg from the Democrats in 1999 put up an anti-genocide bill. Mm. Do you know what happened to that at the end of the day?
Good point. You know, some of us made submissions. I think it got lost in the business of everyone being too busy or it not having any priority. Not exactly, but I think that's what happened. It just vanished, really.
I just recently noticed that there was a notice saying that it was not proceeding. This is 2018. I'm just wondering what the status of that act is at the present time. And I don't think many people realise that. Well, I'm saying that they haven't got a genocide convention here. That means there's no prevention and no punishment for it.
Yeah,
despite the federal court saying that it did occur here.
Yeah, that's right. Well, as you know, you're involved in that matter. Justice Crispin said, even though on fact he found and that there was numerous accounts and that there was clear evidence of genocide against Aboriginal peoples, but he had no jurisdiction and couldn't proceed because there was no crime of genocide recognised in Australian law. So whilst the Australia supports the International Convention on genocide, of it being a crime, it has no application to the position of Aboriginal peoples of Australia.
Hi, Irene, it's Viv here. Just what you said there, isn't Article 5 of the Convention, Australia is in clear breach, as I understand? They were given time to come and legislate and make it, you know, illegal here. That was the expectation.
You're talking about the one on assimilation.
Article 5 where the one it says...
Removing children?
No. I could be wrong with the number, but where it says that they... Now go back to your countries and you're given some time to make it law there.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I should have it.
That'd be the Ratification Act.
Right in front of me. But if we were to talk about there's an article in the convention that says that the forcible, and this has been raised over and over again, the forcible removal of children from a particular group of peoples is a crime of genocide. And clearly that was also raised by Commissioner Wilson, the Commissioner of the 1990s Stolen Generation Report.
Ron Wilson,
yes. Yeah, who said that, again, you know, that there was evidence of the forcible removal of Aboriginal children constituted a crime of genocide. That was also sort of, you know, slapped down and banished and disappeared. And comparative to, you know, in Canada, another scholar, Tamara Starblank, has just recently written a book called Suffer the Little Children, who gives a really clear account of the removal of Aboriginal children from their families, not dissimilar to what happened here in Australia, and the reasons why this is never ever sort of surfaced within the jurisdiction of Canada and also within Australia as constituting a crime of genocide. So that to me is really the illogic of how illogical the law is in this area, that while we have clear evidence of the forcible removal, it aligns with the Genocide Convention itself. Getting that point up and heard and bringing it before the jurisdiction of any of the Australian courts is highly problematic. And further to that, it's also difficult with the, you know, people will say, well, what about the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples? Well, the very reason why Aboriginal people explored the UN as a possible remedy was because we were getting no traction on the ground here in Australia within domestic law. And a lot of the work, the early work that was done in the UN in drafting the declaration, I know because I was involved in a few of those sessions, was largely the drafting of minimum standards, and the purpose and the reason behind the drafting of the minimum standards in the declaration was for the very purpose and reason to prevent the ongoing genocide of Aboriginal peoples. Now, that was an account that was given by, you know, by the majority of Aboriginal people who were going there, not as representatives of the states, because remember, we have also had a number of Aboriginal people who've been involved in the UN who in my view, are not representative of the Aboriginal nations. They've been funded by the states to attend, but largely on the ground at that grassroots representation of our nations, the aim was to prevent the genocide. So that really does tell you something about the what's happening domestically and internationally, that we are really don't have clear remedies in international law for the prevention of genocide of Aboriginal peoples and the ongoing colonialism. And that really says something about the effect of the UN Genocide Convention, the effect of it being completely ineffective, or the impossibility of Aboriginal peoples internationally and here at home being able to use it as a remedy to stop the various actions of genocide, which, you know, as I said, is the forcible removal of Aboriginal children, the
deaths in custody.
And if the convention had have been broadened to include cultural genocide, so when Lemkin, Raphael Lemkin, who was the drafter of the convention, one of the drafters, the most recognised drafter, formulated the convention in the 1940s, there was reference to cultural genocide, but that was removed, and it was removed specifically to ensure that the convention didn't apply to colonised people, to Aboriginal peoples who'd been colonised and who continue to be colonised today. So it was intentionally removed to ensure that it was limited, and limited to not cover our
yes, that's as I understand. Irene, could you explain what the state, this assumed authority, what they tell the United Nations and the Northern Hemisphere, who sort of don't seem to really see what's going on here, what do they tell them for the last 70 years that appeases them? I heard someone in the UN from representing Australia saying how heinous a crime genocide is because they're marking the 70th anniversary. Mm. So what's the tale they're telling them?
Well, I guess that's the problem, is who's representing, who represents our position, and that's highly problematic. The Australian state is obviously going to airbrush out any information or detail about acts of genocide and the situation of the forcible removal of children, amongst other evidence that we would argue constitutes genocide. So, I mean, I think that's where the problem lay, is how our voices are being represented, how our experiences are being represented. We're largely, I'd say we're not being represented, that the Aboriginal view is not being represented, because it's being put by the voices that are heard are those by the state. And, you know, we may say we have some Aboriginal representation, but the fact is that the Aboriginal representation that is the voice within the UN are people who've been appointed by the Australian government.
All right, I'm just thinking
The two Aboriginal positions on the UN Permanent Forum and the UN Expert Mechanism have been appointed by the Australian government.
There you go. I'm just thinking of the whole thing.
And I'm not making any personal attack on those individuals, but it's a fact. If you're appointed by the government, then you're going to represent the government. So there's a clear conflict, and I think that one of the problems for us is that the UN, the UN body, have not properly dealt with those.
Are they conspiring? Are they collaborating in Australia's experience here?
Well, we could say all of that, the point I'm making is that the UN has rules about conflicts of interest, and my question to the UN is, why aren't they considering these conflicts as they arise and apply to Aboriginal people?
The United Nations Convention was to prevent and punish prevention. Now, it seems very clear to me that Australia has failed to prevent. I know they haven't punished anybody.
Yes.
So they're clearly in breach of the Act. And you know, one of the things that came out of the Nuremberg trials was evil reigns when good people do nothing. So what does that say about this country here?
Well, it applies, doesn't it?
So where do we go from here? Now, what do we do? What's the next step on this?
We just keep on telling the truth. You know, we can't abandon and I'm not going to use the word hope. I have been using the word hope, and it's a late. I think that we need to go into our languages and find what that word is. And in my view, it's about, we have an obligation to the future, and it's looking to the future and taking responsibility for our own Aboriginal futures, and that we have one, and that also for our young people that are being born, that we're able to pass on that ethic of an Aboriginal future, that we've been here forever and we have managed this country, this continent, all of the nations together have managed this place forever, and we will be here forever. And I guess I want to see us. And I'm not going to demean that and say it's rhetoric. It's an ethic. It's an Aboriginal ethic. It's what's been passed on to us, and what we'll pass on. So, in our thinking and in our doing, in our acting, that we continue to hold ground, and do that, and hold the authority, And the rest is, as it has been for the 250 years, is just an ongoing struggle to stand our ground in light of the fact that the Australian state is an illegitimate colonial construct. And I'd have to say that, that international law and the UN is also itself a construct of colonialism.
Yes.
It came out of colonialism. So therein lay the problem, and we keep going to the state and we go to the UN for a remedy against colonialism. So the remedy really is in everyone coming to the truth of the Australian state, acknowledging its very own colonial character and also the UN. And so there's not a practical ready-made solution, but I think that the truth is a good place to start.
Absolutely.
Because we're just feeding some kind of, you know, the illusion of recognition is problematic. I mean, it's highly problematic for us to go and seek recognition from the Australian state and from the UN. And I say that as a lawyer looking at the future. But in the meanwhile, for all of us who have families and have lives in the day to day, we're in a space where we're negotiating peace, you know, and I think we have an obligation to keep doing that work because
Irene, I just want to add to that, like, you know, we owe this obligation to our children to bring them into a safe place. And also we need to acknowledge our ancestors and our elders who died in the process and people who continue to die in an, you know, as an act of genocide that's going on here. So that needs to be acknowledged too. Australia's never got consent, has no jurisdiction, and got this whole litany of human rights crimes against our people and their own. So it's in the interest of all people that, that these sort of heinous crimes are dealt with immediately, like the same urgency as when the Nazi Germany was in control of the place.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just, it's 70 years on now from the Genocide Convention when the Liberal Party first came to power, the Menzies government, and they had the responsibility of ratifying and legislating. Obviously went in the too hard basket. And I'm just wondering what happened in 99 when Senator Brian Gregg put it up again, and it's still not adhered to. So, I think it's just, like you say, we've just got to keep marching on, and sooner or later this will become reality, that it'll be a genocide-free country that we're in if we keep going and keep fighting for what's right.
It's problematic. We're seeking a remedy against genocide from the perpetrators,
yes,
from the state and from the UN, and that's the position. We also have an obligation to try and keep the peace in our own lives. And
it's like
and
a
our nation. So it's we're in a very 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 well. It's precarious. It's always been precarious from the time of Cook's Landing. It's been, it's been precarious. It's not much has changed. Nothing has improved. It's getting worse because we're also suffering the ongoing degradation of our lands, of our lands, which we're all connected to.
Incarceration rates of our people.
It's improving. I have to. I can't see the improvement. I think it's worsening, and not only worsening, it's worsening for everyone on the planet. So,
just the final throes of colonialism on its way out, and they're just desperate and prepared to do anything in response to maintaining their status quo.
So I think simplifying. I think that the future is in the future is for all of us is to decolonize and not to throw that out as rhetoric, but as one where people understand the depth of colonialism, that the Australian state is a colonial state, that the UN that we're appealing to is a collaboration of colonising states, and that it is these institutions that need to decolonise. We just need to continue being ourselves and managing the country as we have been for forever. It's the colonial mechanisms that need to unpack themselves, and that's where I see the work needs to be done. Is it impossible? Probably, but the future becomes impossible if this work doesn't get done.
Irene, I want to sincerely thank you for coming on the show this morning. And for listeners out there, I want to perhaps talk a little bit about, you've got an extensive history and understanding here. You know what you're talking about. And you're also here, is it true you are the first Aboriginal law graduate of the time when that happened?
Adelaide, from
South Australia. It's pretty significant.
So thank you for all your work too, because a lot of it's available online. I've done a lot, and you're using that information to tell us the truth, as I said. I'm 100% aligned with everything you say. And thank you so much for your time.
Me too, Irene. And I really appreciate you coming on here. I know you're busy, and you've just been travelling.
We're all busy.
We are that.
All of our old people are busy keeping their families and communities together. I'm no more busy. We're all on the same boat. So, look, thank you both. I know you two are busy too. I appreciate the work you do with the program. So thanks for the invitation.
Thank you. I won't say anything about hope, but we have a lot of faith in people like yourself, Irene, and, we've got with people like you. We can put this back out in an informed way back at these colonising states and the United Nations included. We haven't got people like you. We've been in deep trouble. So thank you very much again. And hope to catch up soon.
Okay, have a nice day, you too.
Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
And that was Irene, what an experienced, I suppose the word, activist in the area of law, and particularly international law, and how it applies to this country. So just like, I want to say thank you again to Irene.